So I'm going to start this one kind of at the top of the waterfall. The ending first. This is something that this is something that Kirtani read at Swami Kriyananda's memorial after he left the body, and his body was laid out in the temple in Assisi, and people were praying and meditating for several days, and then there was a memorial around it. And she chose this from the Bhagavad Gita commentaries that Swamiji had written, had edited. Arjuna said, this is number 54, Arjuna said, O Keshava Krishna, what are the signs of one who has attained calm wisdom and is established in union with God? How does he speak, sit, walk? O Partha Arjuna, one who has put away all desires, being wholly contented in the self, may be considered settled in wisdom. He whose consciousness is unshaken by affliction and is not excited by good fortune, who no longer hungers for earthly affection and is without fear and anger, such a man qualifies to be considered a muni of steady discrimination. He who under all circumstances is without attachment and is neither elated by goodness nor depressed by evil is a man who is a man of established wisdom. The man of perfect self-control is able to act in this world unaffected by it. Inwardly free from attraction and repulsion, he has attained unshakable inner calmness. With the attainment of soul bliss, every vestige of sorrow disappears. Bliss gives perfect discrimination and soon establishes one's consciousness firmly in the self. That person knows peace who, relinquishing all energy-draining desires and fully satisfied with his state of desirelessness, no longer sees himself as a separate individual ego. O Partha Arjuna, this state is known as Brahmisthiti, absolute oneness with the infinite. Anyone who achieves this state will never again fall into delusion. Even at the moment of death, if one concentrates wholeheartedly on this state, he attains perfect eternal bliss. So Kirtani, as many of you know, is the one of the two spiritual directors of the Ananda Assisi Center. And Swamiji spent a number of his years living there, some of his later years living there, when he could be a little farther away from the crowds and all the daily concerns of a colony and just have his little kutir down the road. He wrote, visited with people, had a wonderful, wonderful period of his life there. That was just before he went to India to set up that work, to get that rolling. So, I thought I'd start from that top because Swamiji did a really good job of showing us the goal. What are we going for? What does it look like? And he did it in the face of a lot of obstacles, as we know. He used to say, Yogananda would say, the path is not just strewn with rosebuds. There's a lot of thorns along the way. And Swamiji certainly had his share of thorns. But that was a blessing, and he saw it as a blessing, that was one of the things he could do for his guru, was to go through whatever was given to him with even-mindedness. He said, I never lost my peace. And that's just a sentence that I bring to mind quite often. It's possible to go through anything and never lose your peace. Now, I'm not there. Most of us aren't there yet, but it's really nice to know you can and that there was somebody who did. And so we sort of see that shining, often when we sing this song, love is a star, though shining afar, it can guide us and help us. Some of the last few times we sang that song as a choir, whenever Swami was in the audience, many of us found ourselves singing it to him, because he'd been a star that had guided us, and still is, that kind of consciousness, that kind of... conscious aware being who is looking out for us, anyone who comes here to Ananda, who's a Kriyabhan, who tunes into him, his consciousness is there. There's one story, you know, because here we all are, and there are a lot of great stories, and hopefully you'll read all of these stories, and that you'll read Asha's book, two books about Swami, because it really gives you kind of something to tune into, something to grab onto, something to think about, you know, that you can know him by that. He also said, if you want to know me, listen to my music, tune into my music, that he put consciousness in that music. And it's not just, oh, isn't that a nice consciousness for a person to have? Of course it is. But the Yogananda also gave him responsibility, spiritual responsibility, to help people who tuned into his consciousness. So anytime we do that, there's something on the other side of it. There's help. There's guidance. There's presence that's very real. And I'll tell one story about that so we can all be encouraged going forward. And that's... Swamiji had just left the body, I don't know, maybe it was just a few days, I think. And we were playing Finding Happiness, the movie about Ananda community.
It was the night just before he left.
Yeah.
Okay.
He passed right after the movie.
So the movie was playing. Many people, you know, we all went to see it, some of us for the second or third time, and there was a lady there who was seeing it for the first time. In fact, it was the first time she'd been to anything at Ananda. She was the mother of one of our longer-term devotees. So she came, and she was blown away by this person on the screen, you know, this man who at the end, you know, he's saying, give them my love, and, you know, you're seeing what he created. And she's a very devotional type of person anyway. She grew up with a spiritual tradition. She was very devotional in her prayers and things. So she had a heart that was like that. But as soon as she saw Swamiji, some special connection happened with her. And then Sunday service happened, which was a day or two later. And she went up to someone, oh, I saw that movie. Where is this man, Swami Kriyananda? I must meet him. I feel in my heart that there's such a strong connection with him. I was so inspired. I can't wait to meet him. Where can I meet him? And she was told, he just left the body, like just a day or two ago. And she just thought, oh, I missed my opportunity. She was quite, you know, disappointed that she couldn't meet him after feeling that connection. Well, it happened to be that she was having some thing going on with her digestive system, some scar tissues and various things, a lot of pain. And she was now, she'd had one surgery, it came back two surgeries, it came back three surgeries, it came back. She was either on her fourth or fifth surgery now. They were saying, come back again. We want to do it again. And she was, she's elderly, you know, almost my age, probably. But not quite, Shanti.
It's funny how that bar changes.
I know, it's like, not quite Shanti's. What's in a number? Anyway, she's a very youthful person, like we all try to be. And so, but still, she was getting tired of this, you know, surgeries. And so... she was a person of great faith. So she was in, what can I do? I have to go to the surgery. So she's in the hall. They have her on one of those gurney things. Some reason the operating rooms were backed up that day. She was scheduled to be in there, but she couldn't get in yet. So she was waiting and waiting and waiting a long time. And during that time she was waiting, she just started fervently praying. She just, I don't want to do, please God help me. I don't want to do this surgery. I'm just... please, you can do anything. No, whatever her deep prayers are, I don't know exactly, but she was doing them for a long time. Well, after she prayed for a while, she said, I looked up and I saw, she saw it was real, a real image, picture, presentation of Swamiji right there, like a visit. Swami visited her. And she looked up at him, he looked at her, and she just felt this very powerful energy coming through him. And she says, after the fact, she said, I know in that moment I was healed. I knew that I was healed. And she said, I don't know how I knew, but I just could feel that. So then she's, you know, the doctor saying, let's go into surgery now, you know. That's probably not what the surgeon was doing, but, you know, it was time. Yeah, another one.
So, isn't that what doctors do?
Now I get to get one of those things. You know, it was going to help.
But they did it in private.
No, but Master did it with the soul, right?
Yeah, right.
Now
yeah.
I can hurt yeah. soul.
So maybe the Swamiji's going, now I can help that soul. But anyway, so the doctor's saying, you know, time now. And she's going, no, I know. I really think I'm healed. I really, please take another x-ray. You know, we have to see. Somehow, she convinced him, for whatever reason, grace or something, he took another x-ray and all of the symptoms were gone, so she required no surgery. So I say that because, you know, it's not like we're going to get a miracle every other day in our lives, but it's just if you tune in to Swamiji, he's still out there and he's still able to help us and guide us. And if he can do that, if he can do a physical healing like that, which doesn't happen all that often, he probably can help us know what path we should take or how to go deeper in our sadhana or many of the questions that we would ask. So just to say, you know, like we sing in that song about Master, keep calling him. You know, for me, I keep calling Swamiji, you know, because as he told all of us, he trained all of us very well, Yogananda is your guru. He said, I'm not your guru. I once wrote to him, I said, look, when I'm in your presence, I feel all the things that one would feel if they were in the presence of a guru. As far as I can understand, I feel uplifted, I feel free, I feel blissful, I feel like all the things. I feel this consciousness that's so expansive when I'm in your presence. You know, sometimes, not every moment, but often when I was in his presence. So doesn't that mean, you know, if it's coming in such a big way like that, aren't you my guru? And he said, I may be the one you have to come to for guidance or advice, but it always comes from God. God's the guru, and Yogananda's the guru. It comes from him, he says. It comes from him. So God sent it to Yogananda, who also said it comes from God. Don't worship me, this vehicle. We had in the readings a week or two ago, you know, anyone who says their God isn't God, anyone who says there isn't God isn't God, because, you know, out of the mouth it comes, it's not the body, it's something, it's a consciousness that is a spirit that can live in a body, and it can be realized in a body, like with Yogananda. But, and Master told Swamiji that he would have his freedom at the end of his life. So, you know, we saw that at the end of his life, he was so much in bliss, and to be around him, couldn't help but feel, you know, a good amount of that. And just to say that's still there, you know, it's, people have said it's easier for them to access Swami now because, you know, when he was, you know, it used to be that, okay, Swami's with us, he's in Italy right now, and you'd think, oh good, he's going to come back from Italy, and then he's going to be in Palo Alto, or he's going to be in Ananda Village, or he's in Ananda Village, oh good, he's going to come where I am, or I'm going to go where he is, and then, you know, this thing's going to happen, which is this wonderful connection of energy and vibration and uplift. And so it went, and he was quite an international guy, so he was often here, there, or yonder, and one was waiting for him to come back. But and now people say, you know, I don't have to be around. I don't have to wait for him to come back. He's always here. He's always available to me now in a way that wasn't before, because there's something that Christ said to his disciples that I've often thought of with Swamiji. He said, these things I do and greater things than these things I do will you do, because I go unto the Father. And that was right before Christ was, you know, going to resurrect and he ascended. I meditated on that. I thought, you know, because he could help more, he could help his disciples more in that expanded state without a body and without a work to do, or, you know, he was just more free in his consciousness. So he could infuse them, you know, like he visited them after he left with the Holy Ghost descended upon them. So, you know, one could say Om came to them and they experienced that. But so everybody always wants to have a story or two about Swami, so I'm going to try and see if there's one. Swamiji was he was a man primarily of principle. He lived by principles of the spiritual life. And he lived by helping us all learn how to have impersonal, unconditional love. And impersonal love wasn't, you know, you handle your world and I'll handle mine and I'm not personally engaging with you at all. It wasn't a dry, cold-hearted kind of thing at all. It was the ultimate expansive, warm-hearted, because when he looked at us, he didn't see the person that we were, the personality, the, you know, whatever our struggles and tests, and he didn't see that, really. He was aware of it, and when he helped us, he would take that into account. But he saw us as souls. And, you know, there's something that to be looked at as a soul, it just is so healing for the whole being. You're to be recognized as this free being that's just living in this body, having this experience. But it's like the gig's up. You know, this isn't who I am. And we kind of know it. But then when somebody looks at you like you are that divine light, you are a free soul, it just, you know, it's easier to get into it. I remember once I'd had some back problems, and there was a big satsang at Swamiji's house at the Dome. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I can go and sit there. You know, my back's really hurting. But, of course, I didn't want to miss the satsang. So I went anyway. So I went, and Swamiji says, how are you? Oh, I'm fine, Swamiji. You know, you put up the right front. And it doesn't usually fool him. It wouldn't fool him. But anyway, we were doing our best. You know? So he was sitting, and he had a chair up on the upper deck that he always sat in, a blue chair, comfortable chair. That was kind of Swami's chair. He would sit in that chair. And then we'd go out and get a snack or get food or a drink or whatever, and then everybody'd be moving around, and Swamiji would get up from that chair, and he'd go somewhere else. And it was one of those moments, everybody was moving around, Swami was out of his chair, and he looks at me, and he goes, go sit in that chair, go sit in my chair. And I'm like, no way, I'm going to sit in this chair in the front of everybody? You know, that's like, what are they going to think, right? Who does she think she is sitting in his chair? Well, I knew I wasn't ready to sit in this chair. But he told me to sit in his chair, so I thought, okay. Okay, I will sit in this chair then. I will do it what he's asking, and I will really sit in his chair. So I went, and I just sat. I just let that chair be my chair for a moment, and I really sat in that chair. I went, okay, Swamiji, I'm sitting in your chair. Now, will you take it back? But in that, whatever, that 5 minutes or 10 minutes I was in his chair, my back pain completely went away. It was just gone, and I just felt great. There were a couple of times like that. There was one time when we were Guru Seva. I was recognizing the truth of what a lot of these readings were saying, that Swamiji would give a job to someone because he thought it was what would help them grow spiritually. It wasn't necessarily because they knew how to do that job or that they were going to do a good job at that job, but because, you know, something was happening, he saw there's a person, they'll grow spiritually, let me, you know, give them this job. Well, I had a number of those jobs. I don't think I had. I tell you what, folks, aside from loving God and loving Swamiji and singing and, you know, doing some good meditations, I really have been a total failure. I have not succeeded at any project, just about. I've done a few fundraisers, you know, that have brought. But I really, it isn't about, it isn't about material success for me, even though when we were in India, Swamiji had just written the Material Success, the Yoga Principles lessons. And he wanted to charge, I don't know, 150, I don't know, 250, something. Something that was like
2,000. I thought it was a big number.
Yeah, it was a big number.
1,200 or 1,000.
Yeah, something like that.
He got the whole thing.
Yeah. He did charge it. He didn't want to. He did.
Yeah, he did. That's right. He did. He charged it. But we bought it. Those of us who were dedicated to him bought it. Well, he was in India, and he's saying, okay, great, you guys go sell it. Get everybody in India to buy this thing. And everybody's going, I'm sure Swamiji, you know, is there another job I can do, you know? So it was kind of sitting there. Nobody was really touching it very much. And so he looks at me and he says, well, I thought you were going to do something with Material Success through Yoga Principles. And I'm going, you did? What am I? I missed it? Okay. Well, if you really thought I was, then you probably are saying I really ought to, so I will. So anyway, I jumped in there. I tell you, it was a fiasco. I mean, pretty much. But I grew spiritually because I was willing. I'll just stop there. I was willing to
Tell us one of your stories. Did you sell one?
Did I sell one or two? Well,
that would be a big success if you sold one.
Yeah, that could have been.
Yeah, in different English, it sounds like
Yeah. Well, I was trying to have it be bigger. I did a training for people in India to go do it. I started a company for people in India to go do it. I did a website for people in India to go do it. And actually, it's not so bad. It wasn't mine. But some people now in India are actually doing it, and it's helping some people, which is good.
Because 15 years later, it's still going.
It was a powerful group of lessons, and so it did find its way, you know, out to the light of day. Maybe something I did helped a little, I don't know. But anyway, it hasn't been about that for me, really. But that brings the point that I wanted to make, which is that true teachings are individual. Yogananda said that, and Swami Kriyananda said that. And just to encourage us all, it doesn't look like the same for any two devotees, really. You know, sometimes we figure we're going to organize this thought thing in our mind and we're going to say, well, there are the bhaktis, and then there are the gyanis, and then there are the karma yogis. And, you know, they kind of find their way, you know, and that's kind of the subgroups of... But, you know, there's some of that, but mostly true teaching is individual. And it's really an inner experience that you have with the guru. And so also for Swamiji, you know, to look for what is that inner experience? I mean, he will give you all the facts and he had a great balance of being wise, great communicator, wonderful writer, musician. There's so many ways to tune in to the consciousness that he was channeling. We're really, really fortunate. And it's good to remember that with all those skills he had, developed from incarnations and incarnations, no doubt, he comes to Yogananda with all that, and Yogananda goes, you have to get devotion. You have to get devotion. That's how I can really help you, is if you have devotion. So he shows us it takes all the pieces that we have, but it can't be done without devotion. So... So often people will talk about how Swamiji corrected them, and you can see the individual way that he was with people. He worked with people as they were, and not, two people got the same response from him because they were different. There were ones who were really, really quiet and listened, and all he'd do is look at them, and they'd know, okay, I gotta fix that. I mean, they just get it. Other people needed strong correction because they were just too busy doing other things or whatever. They didn't hear, they didn't get it. He'd have to stop them and really look them in the eyes. And one of the devotees said, if I don't get it in my quiet meditation, if I don't get it from the subtle clues of my gurubais, and you know, if I don't get it this and this and this, then suddenly Divine Mother will hit me across the head with a 2x4. Charidas said that. So sometimes it felt like the people who were who were sometimes the sort of stronger ones in some way, strong-willed, etc., he had to get their attention so he could have some firm corrections. But always what I felt in being corrected by him was he knew how to go deeper than anybody else had ever gone into my soul and notice that there's a place is not right in there. It's ailing or sick or whatever you want to call it, in delusion. And he was able to just kind of like psychic surgery, you know, he could go right in there and I could feel it. Oh my gosh, that is there, that thing, that quality. And I would be like, oh, I could almost not breathe. You know, it was like really being, you know, punched in a serious way. But at the same time, as he was going in, like ahead of his fingers doing the psychic surgery, I could feel love. That's what I'd feel. And then that thing would happen. Oh my gosh. You know, I'd feel like I was being exploded because some little thing that I didn't know I had was exposed and it was so painful to see it or whatever my reaction was. But then I would feel his love on the other side of it. Like he just did it because he loved me. And I knew that. There was never a question. It wasn't for his good that he was doing it. And it wasn't because he thought I should learn or because why can't you start? Or, you know, it wasn't about his need or his He just had a perfect attunement, what can you say, with God. And I don't know anybody else who corrects that way, but it's my aspiration in some lifetime or other, if I have to correct people, that I learn how to do it that way. What else about Swami? He always would stand for principle. I remember one time, and it's good to have the balance of these things, he had written the book Yogananda for the World. Yogananda, is that it, for the world? The last book he wrote about Yogananda? Right after Dhyanamata passed, he was going to publish it. Was that the name of it?
That was one of the versions of Yogananda. That. I don't know if that was the one right at that moment, but okay.
Yeah, I think it was. Anyway, Yogananda for the World, he was saying the difference between SRF and Ananda, you know, and what had happened, that whole story. He felt it really needed to be gotten out, and he was going to release the book in L.A., and within a day or two or a week, certainly, of that release time, Dhyanamata left the body. And
can I just say, it was not a, like, sweet and loving and easy-to-read book. He pulled no punches. Yeah. I just no, make it was, clear what was coming up. We were all sort of like, you're going to publish that?
It was a corrective. You know, he'd been working with them as a fellow brother, guru, you know, of the same guru, brother, disciple, for 30-some years in the most subtle and loving and kind and patient way. And he was getting very old. Dhyanamata was getting very old. He was just like, let's put it all on the table. You did this, you did this, you did this. I mean, all the bad stuff was just out there on the table in the book. And he was going to publish it. So Dhyanamata leaves the body. And I'm thinking, whoa, why don't we wait a couple of months? I mean, everybody's going to be like, you know, really missing her, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I was just feeling like... So I went, happened to be seeing him in L.A. for some reason, wherever I was living, Sacramento maybe. But I was down there seeing him, and... sure enough, we get in the room and he goes, so, what do you think about the new book? I'm going, oh, well, Swamiji, you know, it's very truthful. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe that's it. Well, so, I think it's a good idea to publish it now, don't you? And I'm going, well, I can't lie to the guy, you know, I have to. So, well, Swamiji, actually, my friend, my teacher, well, Swamiji, I think, you know, I think it might be good if we waited a little bit of time just to give people time to mourn Dhyanamata, you know, and then, ha, 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 I knew I made the right decision to publish it. If you think we should wait, I know we should publish it now.
It's so radical.
He was always trying to teach me not to be too tender-hearted, you know? I mean, sometimes you gotta just do what you gotta do.
To the fourth.
That's it?
To the fourth.
Yeah, it was just... It ended up that he decided not to. It went back and forth and back and forth, and he didn't publish it.
Or he pulled it off. Pulled
he
it
published
off
it, but he asked people to take theirs back.
Right.
He didn't want it. Is this correct?
Yeah,
he put
that's
it
right.
online, I think. He didn't.
No, there was a book.
Was there a book?
Yeah. He basically said, bury that one. I'll redo it, and which he did later. I don't know how long it was after that.
Everybody was happy to bury it. Yeah.
But he gave you the lesson first before he did that, made that decision.
Yeah, it was a good opportunity for him to give me a lesson, so he missed it. And I got the lesson, I think. Maybe I'm still working. But yeah, you have to stand up for principle, but it's the consciousness with which you do something. And that's, you know, when we, I don't know if I've told this group this story, but it's a good one. When we in Palo Alto, you know, we were kind of on the front line. There's LA down there. Spell for Relation Fellowship is suing us. It's happening in our, you know, neck of the woods in the court. The press is trying it. You know, here we are, and then people in Nanda Village are up there, you know, in the hill, kind of more farther away from it. And it came time to, you know, the inspiration was to go down and let SRF people know that, hey, your leaders of your organization are suing these people, you know, these people in Nanda, and we think you ought to know it. So we went down during their convocation, which was controversial for, you know, deep spiritual esoteric Bhagavad Gita in battle kind of ways that you look at things. But Swamiji was behind it, but he was behind it if, and that's it. he was behind it. He said, okay, you know, you guys are prepared to do this, you know, and I think it's going to help too. I think it's a good thing to be doing in a way. But I only want you to go if you can do this, if you can go down there and let this information out and stand up against, because we were on the front, on the sidewalk, literally. Their nuns and their people are walking by, and we're on the sidewalk singing our little hearts out about love and joy, and here we are, we're Ananda, and, you know, do you really want to be killing us? You know, and there we are on the street. And, you know, we were facing up against it. And he said, you can do it if you can do it without any rancor in your heart. That's not an easy thing to do, because usually when you fight against somebody. And in the world, how do you fight? They're the bad guys, we're the good guys. It's obvious. You know, how else do you fight, right? But he's saying, no, I don't want you to do it that way. I want you to go and not have rancor. These were his gurubhais. He loved these people. They were master's children, too. Not perfect, making some big mistakes, but still, he didn't want us to be hating them or not liking them or being mean or mad or angry at them. So it was tricky, but I was impressed with our leaders. They were able to do it. They were able to take it right to the edge of being strong and standing there and here we are and, you know, we don't think it's a good idea what you're doing. But not we don't like you because you're doing it.
He actually made us promise, mm-hmm. if any person in the entire group, there were 35 of us or something,
at least, yeah.
if any one person shows anger once, everyone has to promise to come home. So that was kind of a high bar.
Yeah, that was a high bar.
And then he sent Vidura down to spy on us. to adjudicate. But nobody got angry.
Yeah, it was remarkable.
What if you felt angry? Was that... Or just show.
I never sensed that anybody felt angry.
You know, the way we did it, it was so great. There's a song Swamiji writes, it calls Come Gather Round, We'll Sing Joy Today, Shots Not of Anger.
Joy will be our gun.
That was the theme. Joy was our gun. We were there, we were sharing with great joy. We were standing up for Swamiji, up for Ananda, up for Master's work. We were standing up and we were singing our little hearts out with the greatest joy. And we were just saying, you know, that magnetism of the joy that we have, and we, you know, we know we're standing up for something right and good, so we were happy to do that. And it just, I don't know, there was a grace to it. I think there was a lot of Swamiji's grace in it too. But yeah, it was joyful. What a way to win a battle. And actually it was a turning point. I think it really was a turning point to let, for them to, for their people to know what was going on. So Swami's was certainly not beyond a fight. I loved the comparison in the readings between Henry and Swami. I don't know if you had a chance to read those from Catherine Kairavi's book, Two Souls, Four Lives. This is the life of Henry the First and William the Conqueror in that incarnation. Who also were, William the Conqueror was Yogananda, Henry was Swami, he feels, and a lot of evidence shows. So that synopsis of how they were alike is very interesting to see. So so we come from a great tradition, we come from a great leader, and his example, I was just, in reading just these two pieces again, I thought there's so much teaching in here about how to live. About how to be, how to respond, and just so much hope that, you know, we can go there. He went there. He is our age, you know, in our generation, almost, you know, with just one generation above those of us who have this color. But it's so, you know, and what he said, this is the last piece I'll end with, he said, I felt I knew it wasn't my role to be a teacher, like a guru, you know, to say I'm the one. He said, I really felt I could help people if I was just their simple, unassuming friend, if I was just their spiritual friend. And that's how everybody felt about him. He was just everybody's spiritual friend. Sure, he knew more, his consciousness was vast, but he was able to relate to us as our friend. And it just made it seem so accessible. As long as we keep going, we can get there.